You're listening to Quality Time.
The song It's Good to Be a Man. That's one of my favorite songs.
It is Good to Be a Man.
She does a really incredible cover. You can YouTube this as well. She does just a fucking perfect cover of My Neck, My Back, My Pussy, My Crack. It's amazing.
Better than Richard Cheese's?
Yeah, it's so good.
Okay, I'll listen to it. Hell yeah. I did. L. King, that's Rob Schneider's
daughter.
Rob Schneider.
The wow. Rob Schneider.
Hell yeah. Amazing. Well, are we ready? Welcome back to Quality Time, guys.
Yeah, welcome.
Yeah, a two-parter episode. Look at that, guys. Rolling up with Phantasm Part 1, Part 2 here tonight.
1.2.
Listen, it's very exciting. But before we step into the bedlam and the madness that is Phantasm, I do have some corrections that I have. Listen, I got a lot of shit for not mentioning this for multiple weeks because Joe Robinson, avid listener of the show, listen, he's a buddy, he's everything, and he's one of our top listeners.
Also a manager and job giver for the murder mystery.
Yeah, so. I mean, he's very good. He takes personal offense when I forget Joe Robinson's corrections. We got halfway through the episode. It ended up being a two-parter, so I told myself, you know what, we're going to make sure we get Joe Robinson's corrections out of the way. So without further ado, here's a little bit of Joe Robinson's corrections. Okay, so Joe definitely mentioned, this is from the Mike Moran episode where we talked about the Halloween continuity. We refer to him as Paul Rudd's character in the movie Clueless as her stepbrother. It's actually her ex-stepbrother, because they're no longer married. They have no blood relation. Joe found it very important that we mention that Paul Rudd in the movie Clueless is not actually her stepbrother any longer.
Weird. Joe, shut up.
Yeah. can I tell you, he said that LOL, I needed one for Kim because she called me out. So he was pulling for that one, Kim. It was a tough one that he had to pull out of his ass for that.
Nice.
So he also mentioned that the Mike Moran episode with UI and Mike Moran with No Jeremy was one of our top three best episodes ever. So,
oh no.
Jeremy, how does that make you feel that you weren't on an episode? It's one of Joe's favorites.
I know that I am hated by certain people, and it's fine with me. So. I gotta be me. What else can I be?
Also, three times during the episode, I imply Michelangelo's David is in fact Michelangelo. It's not Michelangelo. Like, Michelangelo clearly didn't sculpt a sculpture of himself.
It's kind of like Frankenstein's monster. It's not really Frankenstein, you know, as the monster. So.
And then Jeremy then refers to Robert Mapplethorpe as John Mapplethorpe. So.
No, we got this correction in weeks ago.
I know. We got it weeks ago.
Maybe you
but
just
we're
told
so,
me.
All we're right. So backed up. I had to share it. So.
I gotta catch up on my Mapplethorpe.
Hell yeah. I mean, you've been behind on it in a while.
I did see Bohemian Rhapsody. So.
Oh, that's good. It was a good movie. Did you like it?
You know, I really expected to be a lot more gay.
And it wasn't gay enough for you, which is weird because Jeremy.
I'm really expecting a lot more gay sex if I see a Freddie Mercury movie.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
But. I think the most offensive thing, which I'm sure the I haven't heard anything from the gay lobby on this, mm-hmm. is of course during the film when they start up the montage of Another One Bites the Dust. That is the scene where Freddie Mercury is cruising really hardcore leather gay bars.
Which oh, I was yeah? like, okay,
there's a little symbolism there. Good job, director. So
well, that's the Bohemian Rhapsody I know and love.
It's like that's a directorial move that Chris Restivo would make in the movie. So you know?
Yes, yeah. So. Yeah. R.I.P. Chris Restivo.
Why we put it, it's like when Another Bites the Dust, he's like cruising the really hardcore gay bars.
By the way, my name is Eric Woodworth. Jeremy Wood P. Woodworth is to my right. Were we still joined by Jeremy P. Woodworth? Or
no. It is I, Freddie Mercury.
No!
We are the champions, my friends.
And to my left is none other than from the Kimbot 2000 and the beautiful power of 2018 technology, none other than Kimberly Callahan. Kimberly, how
Kimbot
are you
2000.
Doing?
Nailed it. It's funny you bring up Freddie Mercury because the other day my stepson got dropped off by his mom at our house, and he will sometimes sing the songs that she listens to in the car. Mm-hmm. And because there is bad blood between X and everybody but my stepson, I try to nip that in the bud because I'm not trying to hear her bullshit music in my house in any way.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to circumvent with positivity-ness. Mm-hmm. So I was like, let me show this kid some music, because she listens to like pop, you know, stuff like radio stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no. Okay, I was raised by my dad, so I love classic rock. Mm-hmm. So
you sent your
Queen.
Stepson home singing da da da, my darling.
Yeah. No. So I put on Queen, like, oh, he's probably never heard this shit, mm-hmm. right? And he saw Freddie Mercury and he goes, is that a man?
He sure does prance a lot.
He's a very powerful man.
He is a very powerful man. Do you see that bulge between his legs? Strong enough for a woman, but made for a man.
He has a mustache. Hello. Although in the 70s, he did have the long hair, so I guess the kid could get confused by that.
No, that makes sense. What video did you show him?
The first one, he had long hair and no mustache, so he looked like Noel Fielding from... The Mighty Boosh.
Makes sense.
I can think that a kid might think that it's actually Patti Smith. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah, a six-year-old kid would think that's Patti Smith. Absolutely.
What do you think of old Greg?
Oh, gosh.
Old Greg is my favorite. But yeah, those good times. So you've indoctrinated him with Queen to battle all of the Nicki Minaj songs that he's exposed to during the week.
Exactly. And I mean, I feel like any good, especially step parent, but any good parent is not going to let their child live in America and mm-hmm. not know about the greats, you know, Led Zeppelin, B.B. Mm-hmm. King, Johnny Cash,
Jewel.
Queen. Like, yeah, there's just a list of things you have to know about before you go to school and get bullied, you know?
Yes. Yes. I'm on board with that. Hell yeah.
Is that the sound of you getting a swirly, Jeremy?
Yes.
What is that?
That's the sound of Jeremy getting drowned slowly.
As I always screen freeze on Jules' teeth and just start masturbating. So.
Ew, Jules' teeth. Yes. They're so out of line. I'd love to see her do Invisalign and then it somehow get 10 times worse as her teeth grow through the fucking invisible shield and she becomes like a fucking 1970s cartoon monster that rips people's faces apart. That's my Jewel.
And thanks to Jewel, I only wipe with one slice of toilet paper.
Who will wash with one toilet paper when you need a single ply now? Wash your hands and just use your fingers all.
I will never use more than one slice of toilet paper until the snow covers Mount Kilimanjaro again.
Okay, I like it. I'm a fan. Well, I guess should we get back right into our topic of the night, which
yes.
is none other than
Phantasm 1.2
Part 2. Show with. Now, The psychic then gives him the information that fear is just a reflection. Don't be scared. Very, very good. Next, we see one of our heroes, Jody, sitting on the front porch of his house having a little jam sesh as Reggie comes up in his ice cream truck. And we get this little tidbit here of this sweet jam sesh between the two of them, who are both claimed to be musicians. And they ended up jamming out this little improv right here.
Makes me want to throw my panties.
Hi, Red. Hey, Mitch. Yeah, working on it. Just a sitting here at midnight. Right. And I've been sitting here till noon. You see, my lady left me lonely. Yes, she did. Baby left me blue.
What a jam sesh, Jeremy.
Man, that's like America slash two.
Holy shit. Now, Reggie, who is Reggie Bannister in real life, actually plays, is in a band, and he loves playing music. Jeremy, you actually met him at Monster Mania, I believe, one year, and got to jam a little bit with him?
I think he had a special guitar that he was trying to sell for a friend that actually make it, and he makes probably a buck off of each one, and let me play one of his guitars with him, so, you know, it's kind of cool.
So you impressed Reggie with your shred skills?
He could tell that I've definitely played a Zeppelin song or two. So.
Okay. Hmm. Now, Jeremy did make up a special song for the Phantasm film, and Kim, get ready. Strap your tits on real tight, because they're about to fly off
your
body.
You're going to need a sports bra for this.
Because I listened to this one time, and I still don't know how I want to interpret it. Get ready for the Jeremy Phantasm song. Nope, I don't care. You know what time it is.
Thank you, Kirk Hammett.
Good work, Jeremy.
It always takes
say
you a second
time,
to come
Kim?
Back in.
Yeah, you came in a little late there. Go ahead.
I'm gonna say big wow. Really appreciate. You took a very simple song about porch sitting and you turned it into the inner ramblings of a mom's mind when she's trying to get two kids across a parking lot to a grocery store.
I'm gonna ask Kim, with your special powers of intuition, could you actually understand more than 10 words in that song?
Not in my mind, but in my heart, yes. I felt it in the marrow.
I'm gonna give a slight translation that it's Phantasm, a song about Phantasm. The guy's name is Angus in it, so you know that it's metal. And then, of course, look at that metal ball going down the mausoleum And my, what is the last joke I had? Something about
good bit, Jeremy. Good bit.
I dig it.
I forget the last joke anyway.
Okay, you know, we accept you tried your best. That's
you know what I love? I love in movies where like they could totally just like show these guys like going, "Hey man, how's it going?" And that would show you that they're familiar.
Yes.
You know? Just the gentle, you know that David, what's his name? Curb Your Enthusiasm.
David Lynch.
What's his name? Damn it.
Cronenberg.
The dude, the guy. The
Goliath.
Farts. Anyway, his joke David is that he's been doing since, I think, like the 80s, is he says, is it okay if we use two instead of the formal usted? I think we're close enough.
Oh.
Instead, right? Oh. I feel like in movies they could just be like, hey man, what's up? You want a beer? Like, yeah, thanks, man. Like, that shows that they're familiar. Instead, mm-hmm. they had this whole jam session to be like, look, they're close.
We're so close that I come up and drink Dos Equis with my friend I kind of know who has dead parents and lets his 13-year-old brother live in a house by himself. Yeah, that's good. It's a good friend.
Oh, and I think I went too far at Tenacious D when I come up and started feeling up my brother's ass before I give him a beer behind him at the show.
I did slap at it and then got beer spilled on my ass because...
Oh, the last lyric of the song is, look at those Jawas... They're not. It came out before Star Wars, so it isn't copyright infringement.
Okay, I like there it. You go. I like it. So next, we see Reggie take the tuning fork and he puts it to the guitar, and you hear the little.
This is important.
Hum. You hear the little hum as he takes his two fingers and he touches it, and then mutes the tuning fork. Will come into play later on in this movie.
I think it should be more obvious where they put a thing on the screen that says "This is important to the plot."
So. Yes. So next, we see the psychic girl that was with the old lady. She goes to the mortuary, opens a weird door within the mortuary that is filled with light, and then you just hear her scream in terror and scene. Then we see Jody as he makes his way to the Dunes Cantina, the local watering hole, and we get to hear this. I ripped this audio because I thought it was so funny. There's some disco music that's playing in it, and I didn't notice this until I watched it this time. It's the disco version of the Phantasm song playing in the background. Jeremy, listen to this. Here, he gets out of his car, gets out of that fucking sweet 71 Barracuda, walks in, and then you hear this.
Thank you, Neil Norman.
Now, through the window, you can see Mike is still following his brother, looking through the window, listening to shitty disco music, as his brother walks over and finds a very lovely lady in lavender that he starts hitting on, who looks oddly exactly like the woman who stabbed his best friend earlier in the film.
Oh, damn it.
So, he and this sweaty Betty decide to go to the hottest place to get a fucking woman wet, which is the fucking graveyard. So she walks him over. Mike is still hot behind their tails, watching them from a distance. And we get to hear this little exchange from the lady in lavender and Jody.
This is kind of spooky, isn't it?
No, it's exciting. So, what's the only thing to do in this town?
And they start immediately making out right there, because nothing gets me hotter than seeing dead fucking bodies everywhere. Now, Mike is off in the woods watching them from a distance, and we're supposed to believe that he's not jerking off during this as a 13-year-old boy, which is, it's a tough sell, but we believe it for the sake of this film.
He just doesn't want his brother to leave him.
Yeah, he just doesn't want his bro to leave, man. And as he's sitting there, he can start to hear noises and rustling. And there is a very funny part where Mike opens up her her dress, or I'm sorry, Jodie opens up her dress, and you see a wonderful pair of breasts. The actress in this film did not get topless. That's Kathy Lester. Kathy Lester does not get nude in this. She actually refused and didn't know that they put in a body double until she went to the movie premiere and was watching it with her mom. And then the saw fake titties that were hers exposed on camera. And her mom leaned over, who she had told, she's like, I don't get naked. They wanted me to get naked in this movie. I didn't. And her mom leaned over and goes, you should have showed yours. Yours are much better. And she's like, mine are much better, Mom. So,
and everybody knows that they were actually Melanie Griffith's boobs in this movie.
Now, that dress, that lavender dress that you see, was actually Kathy Lester's real dress that she had worn to the audition. And they asked her in the most perverted way, hey, could you wear that dress that you wore to the actual shoot of the movie? And yeah. She wears it there. And they gave it to the director so that they, like, we might need some body double shots. It was really just for this titty scene. They ended up cutting the back of this and ruining her dress, so she never got it back. So that Jodie could pull it off, and you could see the chesticles in that fashion. Now, while all this is going down and titties are getting exposed, Mike is hiding in the bushes, and then all of a sudden he can hear those weird guttural sounds once again. It's a goddamn midget. And it starts.
What the heck?
He runs past.
Wait here, it's my little brother. I think he's got some kind of a problem.
And meanwhile, he has what's her name's panties in his mouth while he says that. So Jodie chases after him. And they get to, like, a river embankment.
Rammstein.
This is a good Rammstein move.
Rammstein. Rammstein. Rammstein.
What's wrong with you, man?
There's something up there. I know it. I saw it.
What?
Okay, look. I was following you guys. I didn't mean any harm, but it's out there, and it's gonna get me.
Didn't mean any harm?
What's out there?
I don't know. It was little and brown and low to the ground.
Great Mexicans.
Was it a
there
gremlin?
Wasn't any gopher. Where's that girl anyway?
Well, she's waiting back there for me, you idiot.
Did you hear that?
Ooh.
That's only the wind.
Yeah, it's just normal demon noises.
I like that.
Better go get her before it gets her.
I like that the power to get laid is so strong that you can hear, like, dude, that was just my stomach. You know that? Like, I'm ready to.
That was just a queef.
Yeah, that was nothing, man.
You'll learn about those funny lady noises later in life.
So he, Jodie ends up giving him the keys to the CUDA. And gives them to his 13-year-old brother, who doesn't have a license, and allows him to go drive his ass home.
Hell yeah, he's 13, man.
Fuck yeah. 70s were a different time, man. 70s were a different time.
And also, don't smoke too much when you're driving home with it. You gotta at least keep one on the wheel.
So, Mike...
All right.
Mike goes back home. Jodie goes back to go see if the lady in lavender is still there, but she is gone. And then he returns home to find this. Mike then goes down and lays in bed with the most 70s blanket ever, and dreams of the tall man hovering over his bed as ghouls fucking reach up from a graveyard underneath him and grab at his bed. It's a very surreal shot. I think it's kind of beautiful. It's one of the things that makes this movie really fun. No, you guys don't hear that. You weren't a fan of the shot, Jeremy?
I'm going to guess this is when Kim turned it off, so.
This is where Kim gave up on the movie.
That's another title option for this movie, is the most 70s blanket ever.
So, Next, we see Jody return to the cantina the following morning, looking for the love of his life. And Mike is still following behind, and it's the scene that Jeremy talked about earlier, where Mike looks across the street and he sees the tall man walking down the street, Angus Scrimm, and he stops right in front of Reggie's ice cream truck and ice cream parlor as he opens up the back, and you see the condensation flowing out of the back of it.
As Reggie just takes a small vape for the day.
Yeah, yeah. Giant cloud, giant milky clouds falling out of the back of it, and just stares right at Mike.
As Angus stands there, coconut flavored vape. Boy.
Now, Angus obviously plays the tall man in this movie, and he is a rather tall man to begin with. He was 6'4" when this was filmed. Over the years, as he got older, he obviously got shorter in stature as you shrink as you get older.
As he became one of those midget Jawas.
But on top of that, if you look at his ridiculous shoes, he's wearing like 4-inch high heels in this movie that also have inserts within him, so that when he wears them, he's almost close to 7 feet tall, which is rather imposing for such a large man, and also explains why he moves like and runs around like he's walking on broken glass through the entire film.
Just like, what's her name from the Eurythmics?
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking, Jeremy.
And every time you say from a distance, all I can think of is Bette Midler.
So, obviously, it freaks out Mike to the nines. Back at the house, Mike works on the Barracuda in the garage, and all of a sudden, when he's working under there, the car starts to shake. He can hear those little growling noises that fucking comes off of the jacks and kind of smushes him underneath the car. But Jeremy, what was that?
That scene where Angus was across the street with the ice cream that missed out on one perfect scene. And that was the scene of the kid taking a big giant hit off his bowl right before he sees him walking in slow motion. So.
More weed coming out of there, please. As a director?
It's actually in real time. So.
Hell yeah, hell yeah. So... Now, back at the place, as I was saying before, he's working on the Barracuda in the garage. It's late at night. He starts to hear those growls of the little fucking Jawa midgets going on. And all of a sudden, the car starts to shake. It comes off of the jacks that it's posted up on and smushes Mike underneath, so he has no room underneath the car. He grabs a hammer. He sees a foot, and he fucking whacks it right here as he's pinned underneath the car.
My fucking foot, man.
Oh, damn, look, I know you're not gonna believe this, but these things were here, right in the garage, and they were gonna get me.
And it ends up being Jody.
Give me a break, would you?
They were jumping on the car and making these weird sounds.
Sure wasn't that retarded kid Timmy up the street?
Timmy!
Wait a minute, let's wind this back one more time.
Timmy up the street?
No, I'm making these weird sounds.
Sure wasn't that retarded kid Timmy up the street? retarded kid Timmy up the street?
No, it was the same thing that chased me last night.
I like it. It was a time when you could still use the R word.
Can we ever ask the guy from South Park where they got the retarded guy Timmy? So, you
know. Yes, it's all from Phantasm. Yes. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. So, obviously, Jody does not believe Mike at all. So Mike decides to go out on his own and visit the... basically goes to visit the mortuary once again. He grabs a knife, straps it to his leg, puts a crucifix in his pocket, and sneaks out of the house, ready to get into some fucking hot graveyard action. So he hops the front fence to Morningside Mortuary and makes his way through, breaks out a window so he can enter the basement. He starts to investigate with his lighter, and all of a sudden you can hear some commotion. like somebody's coming, and he has to hop inside one of the caskets. A man in a white hat comes in, and he's just about to open the fucking casket door where he's hiding when the man, the tall man, comes and beckons him back, so he's not, his cover isn't blown. Slowly, the man walks towards the casket and peers in, but he doesn't open it. Next, Mike enters a marble mausoleum room that we had seen earlier in the film when Jody was visiting. He's suddenly confronted by a silver orb that comes floating down the fucking hallway. And this silver orb scene is actually the basis of the movie. Coscarelli had actually had nightmares about him walking down a marble hallway being chased by a giant orb with knives in it. And it's the entire basis of the movie Phantasm, for the most part. He ducks narrowly his head. He gets back up to run, but is grabbed by the ominous figure man who was wearing the white hat earlier. He's fucking kind of wrestling with him a little bit and ends up sinking his teeth deep into the hand of this guy. The man releases him, and just at the last second, that orb comes with knives fucking exposed and slaps him right in between the eyes. And then, not only that, after it fucking embeds in his forehead, a little drill comes out the center of the ball and then starts drilling him right in, giving him basically a lobotomy on the spot, and then shooting loads of blood into the hallway like a fucking fountain as he collapses to the ground. And then you see him piss himself on the floor as the pee comes out, almost earning this movie an X rating for 1977, which they had to do a lot of favors not to get that X rating just because of this scene right here. Jeremy, or Kimberly, in the annals of horror, how did you feel about this scene?
I would just like to say, first and foremostly, all funeral homes are like this. You can make that clear and get that accepted, okay? This was fun. I think as a horror movie, like, this is kind of what you want. And I like the thing that it's so outlandish. Like, you know, horror is supposed to be, like, either something that relates to something in you that you're already scared of. You know, they do this with religion, punishment of sex, possession, stuff like that. The dark hallways, dark corners, things you're already scared of. But then horror also has this weird thing in your brain where you're supposed to be like, wait, that's not fucking right. That's not supposed to happen. So the fact that, like, they set you up in a creepy place, you know, they put you in this dream nightmarescape, which is how the movie was created, which is a very cool thing. But then they throw you this weird visual curveball, and it's just fun, really. It just ends up being fun. I think I stared unblinking at this scene. It will be one of the most memorable scenes I ever watch in my life because it just has no fucking explanation. And you know what? It doesn't need one.
Yeah, I agree with that. Jeremy, would you call this one of the greatest kills in all of horror moviedom?
You know, it's great, and I can't wait until technology reaches fast enough to make the exact same silver ball that can actually protect mausoleums in the future like this.
Yes, that's the only thing that's stopping grave robbers at this point in the future will be these silver orbs.
It's not enough that it, like, kind of implants in them, but it also has to have the drill. And you know, DeWalt has probably been working on it for years now, and they still have, like, rotors that, you know, fly it around. But eventually they will be able to actually fire at somebody and drill into their skull.
Hell yeah.
And that's how orange juice is made.
So he gets back up after this and goes to run, he gets back up after the guy's head is drilled and then comes face to face with the tall man, and he goes, oh shit, and then he makes a run for it. Runs through where the caskets were, slams a door that has a giant fucking wooden latch that he can put down, and he slams the door behind it, but he notices that the tall man's hand is kind of stuck in the fucking door, and it's, like, wiggling. So he takes his knife out, fucking chops his fingers off as it just oozes yellow fucking blood and fluid everywhere onto the floor, and then the fingers are on the floor, and they're just kind of fucking moving and writhing on the ground, like...
At this point, a true Trekkie fan knows that he's Romulan.
That is true.
Because of the yellow blood.
That is true. So, Mike, for some reason, in this moment of chaos, decides to pick up one of these moving fingers and put it in his pocket. As he's all of a sudden attacked by more little midget Jawas, he runs for the window. He escapes through there as their little sausage fingers claw at his the heels of his boot. And he's able to pull himself out and flee the scene. He goes back to his house, and Jody wakes up to find Mike asleep on the steps with a fully loaded shotgun. Jody comes down, sits beside him, and unchambers all the shells, clicking one after the other out of the fucking barrel of the shotgun. They talk outside, and then Mike shows Jody the finger that is still writhing within the little box he's put it in. Because, listen, if you cut off a finger, you put it in a very beautiful homemade box that you've made and crafted and whittled out of wood.
Preferably cedar or like a good oak.
Mm. Yeah, I believe that.
I'm working on this finger box. I've been working on it for a week now for my little moving finger.
So
super hot on Pinterest right now. Severed hand boxes. Really nice engraving. Satin inside is extra, but so worth it presentation-wise. Perfect for fall. Perfect for Christmas. Just think about it.
Okay, so you've had your mummified monkey claw for years now, but do you display it in a good box?
Yeah.
Oh.
Doing it box way.
Ronco, monkey box. Monkey box handlers.
So they decide that Jody sees this and he's like, I've seen enough. We're going to take this evidence to the sheriff, which is, what evidence do you have that you assaulted a senior citizen at a mortuary where he worked? Like, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. He's like, you cut off some guy's finger. We're going to go to the cops. You got this. You got this. It's a ridiculous statement.
The kids
and their evidence. So he runs upstairs to go get the box again, but he opens it this time, and the finger has turned into some giant, weird, demonic fly that's living inside of the box now. It fucking breaks out of there, and it has, like, the little fucking teeth from, like, that little doll. What's that thing?
The Zuni doll from yes. Karen Black?
With, yes, exactly.
Tales of Terror.
Tales of Terror. It has, like, little Tales of Terror teeth.
But the story, Amelia.
He picks him up and puts him in a jean jacket, and he can't control it. Him and Jody slowly wrestle it down the hallway as it basically sounds something like this.
Jody! Jody!
They end up putting it in the garbage disposal, and everything they think is fine. Just having a little breather. Oh, and then Reggie knocks at the door. We get to see good old Reggie show up to the party.
Hi, guys. Mm-hmm. I just thought I'd come over and see what was going on before the kids got out of summer school.
Hey, Mike, you want to ride along with me today? It's pretty warm outside, and the ice cream's going to be flying fast and furious. Remember how good you were at crowd control last time? Hey, what's going on here?
Oh, God, it's back again! Oh, God! Flies up out of the garbage disposal. Reggie is completely flabbergasted on the floor right now as they take it and they shove it back into the garbage disposal, chopping it up to pieces. Whew. Pretty intense.
What the hell is going on?
There you go. Great line from fucking Reggie.
Four non-blondes.
Yes, yes. Which could probably be deemed as probably the cheesiest part of this movie is this effect and this fucking little fly.
A lot of people compare this to the scene in The Thing where Norris's head comes off the table
very
turns
similar.
Into a spider.
Very similar, very similar. Now, Reggie shows up, and then we get to hear some words of advice from his brother right here.
What the hell is going on?
So,
here, you keep that.
He then starts to load up ammunition, hands it to his 13-year-old brother, and we get this sage advice from Jody.
Now remember, you don't aim a gun at a man unless you intend to shoot him. And you don't shoot a man unless you intend to kill him. No warning shots. Hey, you listening to me?
Yeah.
No warning shots. Warning shots are bullshit. Shoot to kill, or you don't shoot at all. Now, you'll be safe here. Just lock all the doors and windows.
Good job, David Lee Roth.
Don't follow me.
You sure you're gonna be okay with that?
I'm just gonna go up there and take a look around. Nobody's gonna see me. But heck, a Colt Army issue will put a man down and keep him there.
Hell yeah. And Jody leaves, and we get to hear some more amazing score right here, which is boom, boom, boom. So Jody then goes back to the mortuary to go check it out for himself. And he goes there, ends up hopping the fence, much like his brother, enters through the little side window, which is still broken, and as soon as he enters, he's attacked by one of the little midget Jawas that jumps on his back, and he probably pumps like fucking half a clip into this thing. It doesn't drop him very well at all. So we realize they have some type of supernatural ability where bullets really don't fuck them up that bad. Pretty scary stuff, wouldn't you say, Jeremy Woodworth?
It's just mustard.
It's just a little bit of mustard.
Just a little bit of mustard.
Just a little bit of mustard.
Spicy southern mustard.
So Jody flees, but a hearse then follows him out of the gate. He fires at the windshield, narrowly missing him as it all tries to run him over. All of a sudden, he sees headlights coming back towards him, but it's not the hearse at all. It's the good old 71 Cuda and his brother Mike, who's once again followed him and not listened to any of the directions he's given him. Jody hops in, and now the hearse is following him in hot pursuit. He takes the pump shotgun, starts bucking off shots into the fucking hearse, and ends up taking out the engine. The car then crashes in a fiery plume of flame and gasoline, and they go back to investigate what happened, and they find one of the dwarves impaled by a tree going through the front of the hearse. They uncover the face, and they see that it's none other than their friend Tommy, who they had just buried 2 days prior. Jody then calls Reggie and tells Reggie to come pick up Dwarf Tommy and put him on ice in the back of his fucking ice cream truck. Because what else are you going to do after you think you've possibly murdered somebody? You call your friends, right, Kim?
Can I just say that, first of all, for the advice he gave him on the gun, as a parent, I always appreciate sage advice. That's the kind of education you can't buy. Second of all, he's using a hearse to go in a high-speed fucking chase. Eric, can you name me two people? Better yet, can you name me one person that fixes hearses?
I don't know anybody. I know somebody who could drive a hearse real good, and that is Mark Callen, none other than The Undertaker from the WWE. I believe he could drive it properly.
Amen, and may his spirit always remain with you on dark days. But what I'm saying is... hearses are not something you can just take to go get fixed. Any self-respecting funeral home owner is not about to just whip this thing around like skirt. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, get the fuck out of here. Third of all, I'm just highly entertained. All of this is very fun to me.
So they go back to the house and shut the doors for the night, and they get a little scare from Myrtle, who is the only time she's seen in this. It's just their black housekeeper that they can somehow afford after having no parents for this amount of time. And she has one line, which is just scaring the shit out of Reggie and not mentioning the anal sex that they probably have nightly. So then we hear Reggie's plan of what they should do, and we get to really see the genesis, I think, of Reggie's character, because he's a focal point in the later movies. He almost becomes more of a Ashley Williams type character as Phantasm 2, 3, 4, and 5 progress. Here's Reggie's plan of what he thinks they should do.
About that. Okay. I see it all now. What we gotta do is we gotta snag that tall dude and stomp the shit out of him, and we'll find out what the hell is going on up there. Yeah, we'll lay that sucker out flat and drive a stake right through his goddamn heart.
You gotta be shitting me, man. That mother's strong.
Hey, hold on. First thing is I want Mike out of here. Reg, you take him over to Sally's, the antique store. He'll be safe there. Then hustle on back. And Mike, no arguments.
So, Jody listens to Mike for Mike listens to Jody and allows Reggie to drive him to Aunt Sally's house, where she has an antique store. Now, while they're at the antique store, Jody is Mike is kind of poking around, and he finds a some old pictures. One that happens to be the tall man, and there's a very surreal moment where he looks at it, and they show a video of the tall man kind of looking at him through the picture and going, really doing a good snarl, really, as only Angus Scrim can.
Really good ripoff from Burnt Offerings, which was the exact same house as Burnt Offerings.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that. Fun.
With the guy with the really creepy pockmarked face from the Naked Gun, who sings out the side of the, out of the shower when what's her name is showering. Maybe it was more, or was it just wrong?
So he tells Aunt Sally and another girl to take him back home immediately, now that he's found this new information from a random picture in an antique shop. Reggie's driving ahead of them, far ahead of them, and he can hear Tommy's body going nuts in the back of his ice cream truck. Jody then has a dream about the tall man where he gets sucked into the wall of the mausoleum. Mike and his two hot cousins then come upon the overturned truck of Reggie's. Mike gets out and goes to investigate and finds out Reggie is gone, runs back to the VW with the girls, and then locks the doors when all of a sudden they're attacked by little monster midgets once again. The midget gets in the back seat and starts wrecking fucking house, throws Mike through the back windshield, and the VW goes driving off down the road, leaving Mike in the middle of the road, left for dead. Now Mike gets back up and walks to his house and sees Jody, who's been sitting like a fucking ass the whole time, just daydreaming, just JD, not a care in the goddamn world this entire time. And he's like, "Oh, you look kind of fucked up, brother. Are you okay?" He then tells them that Sally and Susie and Reggie all got abducted and are up at Morningside, and Mike is fucking pissed. Jody then goes locks Mike in his room, and he's not happy about it at all. Jody then goes and sets off after the tall man at the mortuary. Mike then realizes that he has a shotgun shell in his pocket, and he rigs up probably the most unsafe way to open a door you've ever seen, where he takes a thumbtack and tries to force it into the primer, tapes that then to a hammer that he has, and then whacks it into the door, basically blowing a hole big enough so that he can undo the lock. Jeremy, does this work ever?
I'm pretty sure Dad could have done this, because he would do it, and that's what kids played with back in the days.
It was fun. It was fun.
And the scars that they got live on.
So, Mike is able to MacGyver his way out of here. He's about to leave, and just as he's about to leave, the tall man is waiting right at the door for him, and you hear this.
I hear the sounds.
Oh, no, let's try one more thing here. Sorry.
I've been waiting for you.
He grabs Mike by the neck, forces him into the back of a hearse, driving him to the mortuary, where we're about to see the climax of our film. Now, back at the mortuary, they walk down a hall. Jody is getting whisked away towards the mortuary, and the tall man doesn't realize that he has a fucking 45 in his pocket. He shoots out the back window of the hearse, then he shoots out the fucking rear back tire from inside the back where coffins go, jumps out of the back, and the tall man then drives it directly into a tree, basically exploding the vehicle on contact. contact. Not an easy thing. Going to be real hard to keep in business, wouldn't you say, Kim Ambrose? How uncomfortable were you with the destruction of mortuary goods?
Honestly, I mean, at this point, I thought Trump would be burned alive, but people are still letting him do his thing. So it's like, I mean, if you're going to be a catastrophe, maybe just fucking be it.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. So, Mike makes his way back inside of the mortuary. Inside, Jody is about to open the coffin to his parents, has opened the sarcophagus to his parents, is about to open the coffin, and all of a sudden disappears because he hears some noises. Mike comes in, and he opens the coffin to see that there's nothing in there, so that the bastard, the tall man, has done horrible things to their parents, too. We then see... the fucking orb coming back, and the orb is coming fucking straight at fucking Mike's head, and then all of a sudden Jody comes in and steps from behind him, shotgun blasts that fucking orb to smithereens as it fucking explodes in a mist of blood and fucking scrap metal. Apparently all you need is one good shotgun blast and it takes out one of those orbs. So they walk down the hall to finally go check out the white room that we saw our psychic lady get abducted from earlier in the film. And just before they open it, Reggie catches up in time. He basically fills us in that he was like, I was playing dead in a casket. I'm all fine. I rescued the girls. They're all safe, which is the laziest storytelling I've ever seen, where they just they just moved along the story. We're like, all right, we've had enough of this. We don't have time for reshoots. Reggie saved half of the day. They open the door and
You say he saves half of the day?
Yes, he saves half
of
the day.
That's really how I feel every day.
Well, Reggie's
here
a real
I
man.
I come to save half the day.
And it is proof that I will never pay my rent on time, so call me gay.
rent.
He walks, they open the door, and it is still a bright white room, but stacked on the first two walls are barrels, basically giant industrial barrels, all black with little windows in them. They peek in, and they're all filled with little dwarf midgets in robes. And then they look to the right in the corner of the room, and there's two little pillars made of all made of metal, giving off this ominous hum that's just fucking just making basically making a very loud fucking sound. And you can hear basically what this sound sounds like. It's just like giving off this fucking horrible hum the whole time.
Who owns this place? Who owns this place?
So Mike walks over and he puts his hand in between them, and you can see that it's some type of portal to another.
Don't fear.
And he remembers from the psychic told him, don't fear. So he sticks his head in. And it almost, it doesn't just like he sticks his head in, it kind of like pulls him in a little bit. And as soon as he's pulled into this place, it is a goddamn absolute living embodiment of fucking Wes Craven's worst dream in the whole world. If the skyline is completely red, it is a foreign alien world. All those little Jawa monsters are in a giant line and appear to be doing work on that planet. He's almost yoked back in.
He's almost as bad as if he's instantly transformed to Detroit.
Yes. It actually just takes us here to Detroit, Michigan.
No!
Oh my God!
No, I'm not in Detroit!
He's trying to turn the whole world into Detroit.
He comes back through the portal. Now he's in Baltimore, West Side.
This is way worse. We need to go back. So,
then he finally makes it to Cleveland.
We get this explanation of what Jody saw of what Mike saw as Jody rips him back into the real world.
Using them for slaves. The dwarves. And they gotta crush them because of the gravity and the heat. And this is the door to their planet.
then the power goes out and everything goes dark. Don't you hate it when you figure out the plot to a movie and the alien dimension where everybody's being enslaved, the dead bodies are being reanimated and enslaved to do the work on a distant planet, and then BGE just loses your power?
How could they cut the power? They're only animals, man.
So
game over.
The power comes back on, but they're kind of spooked. Jody and Mike make their way out of the room and find themselves outside. And when the power comes back on, Reggie is alone in the room with the ominous hum once again. Oh, it's so loud. And Reggie gets closer, and he remembers the tuning fork. Outside, Mike is looking around. It's calm outside. Reggie's inside. I have lots of audio of what happens at the end. There's no talking. It's very surreal, all of this. Now back inside. He goes and touches basically the two tuning forks, and all of a sudden it's a giant windstorm that's happening now. Starts sucking barrels off the wall. Reggie's trying to get sucked into the portal now, and shit's getting fucking real hectic. They did a lot of the special effects here with a giant industrial fan that's like 10 foot high and was powered by a Volkswagen like motor. Could blow like 100 mile per hour winds. And outside, you find the lady in lavender who's laying on the ground. Reggie goes to go check on her. Leaves are blowing everywhere. He rolls her over. The lady in lavender then stabs Reggie right in the fucking gut. That fucking sap. It's just mayhem and bedlam. Jody and Mike then see Reggie, their best friend, who's bleeding to death. Jody looks at him for exactly 1 second. He's just like, he's already dead. We gotta leave. It just doesn't go to check on him at all. He's just like, it's too late. We gotta go. It's too windy.
He's been stabbed.
Yeah, he's been stabbed. There's no way we could save him at this point, which I thought was...
You said it yourself before. The 70s were a crazy time.
So,
I just wanted to say, parts of this movie are 100% true. Like, when you die, they make you into Jawas to go into the space portal.
Hell yeah, dude. So, Reggie, they go back to, Jody and Mike then go back to the house to reconvene one more time, and they devise this quick plan about how to solve this problem.
There's an old mine shaft way down by the end of Singer's Creek. 1,000 feet straight down. Just gotta figure out a way to get him up there.
Just gotta figure out.
How about if we make him chase us?
Yeah, so Jody opts that he's gonna go clear away all the warning signs and make himself a little trap up there, and leaves his 13-year-old brother alone at the house once more. Jody, he's not the best brother in the whole world, Jeremy. I don't think you would leave me in this situation to leave me as human bait to kill a fucking horrible monster.
Let's forget the guns. Let's go for the mine shaft thing now.
Yeah, listen, I got this idea for a mine shaft, okay? I was playing a lot of Diddy Kong Racing, and I know that the only way to stop this motherfucker is to drop him down a giant chasm.
I really love this video game named Bagman, and this is going to be our cure all.
So Jody...
Sounds.
Jody leaves, leaves him behind, he goes off to go ahead and chase after fix up the trap. Immediately when he leaves, within seconds, fucking the tall man shows up outside the window and chases him out of the house. And this is kind of like the coolest rendition of the Phantasm music.
You play a good game, boy, but the game is finished. Now you die.
So, the tall man then chases him through a field. Jody ends up getting caught actually in some muck at one point, where some undead people start trying to like grip him down into like quicksand. He's able to break loose from that, and then he sees the lady in lavender for a second, where they kind of hammer home that she is the alter ego of the tall man on top of that, which, by the way, for a weird alien monster, you picked really good with one, okay? You picked a real good alter ego. Sweet tits. That's what I... You know, aliens know how to make it look. Either fucking Angus Scrimp or 70s chick with hot hoots, right?
Body double.
So the tall man then chases him over an extended period of time. Jody then jumps over the mine shaft as our fucking antagonist Angus Scrimp doesn't and falls and holds onto the edge. And then Jody from atop throws down a fucking shit ton of rocks that crush him and bury him deep underneath the mine shaft, and the day is saved.
It was all a dream.
But was it all a dream? All of a sudden, we see this little scene here with Mike talking to Reggie.
I hear the sounds. I know those rocks aren't going to hold them. Not for long.
Hey, you had a dream. Just a nightmare. What do you expect? You've hardly slept since the funeral last week.
I know those rocks aren't going to hold them. First he took Mom and Dad. Then he took Jody. Now he's after me.
Mike, that tall man of yours did not take Jody away. Jody died in a car wreck. A bad dream. Now, I know you're scared, but you're not alone.
No, there she is.
I'll take still care
here.
Of you. I know I can't ever take Jody's place, but I'm sure as hell gonna try.
They kind of embrace each other.
Real.
I'm gonna wear a wig to look like Jody.
You know, partner, what we need is a change of scenery. Why don't you and me hit the road for a couple of weeks?
Where'll it go?
Well, I don't know. I guess we can figure that one out when we get there.
I got some friends at a place called Spawn Ranch.
Okay.
Well, get on upstairs, get your gear together. Let's leave when the sun comes up.
And Reggie just picks up his guitar and is ready to start jamming again.
All right, start jamming before we go.
So, Mike then goes upstairs. And we get one final scene from Mike here. He closes the door to his closet, and the mirror reveals that the tall man is right behind him.
Boy.
Hands break through the glass, drag Mike into the darkness of his closet, and that ends our movie. 1977's Phantasm.
That's what starts up for Phantasm 2, The Dream Warriors.
Dream Warriors, don't want a phantasm more. That was pretty good.
In my dreams, I can walk and I'm not crippled.
Hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah. So, that was it. Phantasm Part 1, guys. Any closing thoughts? I open the floor up to Kimberly Ambrose to give us some fun advice about the movie.
You're gonna get a demerit every time you fuck it up.
Oh shit! Okay, I've demerited Kimberly Callahan with hot
Kim
takes.
Kimbot 2000.
Here, okay. My only thoughts I'm gonna say on this: that little kid needs a life. He needs to stop following his cousin or his older uncle, whoever that was. Get some jeans that fit. Okay, stop worrying about ghosts. and just live your fucking life, man. Get some bubble gum, master blowing bubbles, hit on a girl, grab a titty at summertime. You know, just live your life, man.
Yeah, this kid needs to get his dick sucked every once in a while, okay? And stop worrying about his older brother who's out getting pooned constantly.
Exactly.
At his age and this time, all he was thinking about was his brand new video game called Pong that just came out.
Hell yeah, dude. And who wasn't? I mean, who amongst us?
Damn right.
You know, one thing I can't help but think of is, do you realize what an important cock block he had in this film? I mean, had he not stopped Mike from getting laid, or Mike had not stopped Jody from getting laid, he would have caught in a fucking knife to the chest, just like Tommy had in the opening scene.
Yep, it's a good cock block.
It's like when your parents won't let you go to a party, and then you hear a bunch of people like got into a car accident, and you're like, wow, thanks for making me lame, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a long, lame life.
Like that cock block in slow motion. She's like, dude, don't do her. She's a dude.
Hell yeah. But overall, it was a fun-ass film, man. I really enjoyed the fuck out of it. Good times.
I'm pretty sure the one thing that really disturbed me in the film was where he goes to the library after the shit starts going down. Like, that's a good time to go to the library.
Yeah.
And I'll just find this weird picture of him from, like, the 1890s when he was also a...
Well, that was the antique store. No, he was taken there. That was his aunt's antique store.
And it still was, like, the worst part of the continuity of the film, so...
Yeah, it is weird. It is a weird part of it. But I mean, it's a very independent film for I'd say a high budget independent film more than anything.
I love the cinematography of the film, whether the acting or anything else made sense. At least that carried most of it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I personally love Phantasm. I think the biggest thing about Phantasm for me is that this is a movie that whose score of the film is a 10 out of 10. And if you took away the music from Phantasm, this movie is a solid 5 as a non-music film. But together, it brings it up to a solid, like, you know, like 7.58, you know, to me. That's how it feels.
It's so surreal, the fact that it's like, do we really need... We'll just have cool scenes. We'll do cool scenes, and we'll just cut out the scenes that weren't cool, and that'll be the plot of our movie. So
yeah, and you know what? It did... I realize that the bed that they built the Phantasm franchise is in this film, but I really felt that they brought it all together in Phantasm 2. I mean, Phantasm 2 is a fucking 10 out of 10 and definitely a future movie that we should do, where we really get to see Reggie come into his own. We get the 8-barrel shotgun. We get a lot of good violence in the next one.
Angus Grimm with probably one of the best lines in all the...
No, it's not. Listen, we'll do Phantasm 2 sometime in the future, because it is one of my faves as well. The rest of the series of Phantasm, listen, Phantasm 3, okay, and they go right downhill the further you go into the series.
And Mike is replaced with the guy named DeGrosse, who is also in Zodiac. So
yeah, but then he comes back for Phantasm 3, which is really weird. It's like, oh, you were too busy? I'm sorry, Mike.
And of course, I love the whole reason, because he took off acting too long and he lost his own part in his own film.
What a douche. Ugh, God. I watched a lot of the interviews and the DVDs, and they are almost unwatchable anytime Mike is talking. It's a fucking tough watch for that.
Well, he's no Stephen Jeffries, I'll tell you that.
Well, I tell you what. Hey, Kim, where can people find you?
You can find me on the interweb at Watch Me Doing This on Twitter and at Panic at the Deli on Instagram. Come up to the second Saturday shit show in December, where Eric is doing a fun show on the 15th.
Yes.
We're going to tape it. He's doing a taping. It's going to be super fun. I'm hosting.
Yeah.
So come on out. It's
and Mike
great.
Quinlan and Mike Moran will be part of the show, too. It's going to be really good. I'm very excited about that. If you're listening to this now, in more recent times, you can come see me at the Ram's Head in Annapolis on the night before Thanksgiving. All things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. Give us a 5-star rating on the iTunes and the Stitcher. And Jeremy, take us out.
And that's the last we heard of Jody. He lives, but only in our memories.